Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic segment. I have been looking forward to this for over a week now. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, founder and president with the Long-Term Care Planning Group, Mr. Corey Rick. How are you, man?
We're doing great today. Thanks so much.
Well, Corey, the Long-Term Care Planning Group, what are you doing for folks?
We help people understand and implement long-term care. We help them understand how it's different than health insurance, how it's different than disability insurance. And in many cases, it can be the next logical step in financial planning for them.
Now, what is long-term care? What does that even mean?
Long-term care is the kind of help you may need as a result of prolonged illness or disability. It could be the result of a post-retirement disability. It could be dealing with the effects of having lived a long life.
So it's not necessarily like kind of an immediate health care. It's not like health insurance.
No, health insurance, and that's a great question. Health insurance is geared to help you get better. It's delivered by somebody with a lot of training, a medical doctor, a physical therapist. They used something called skilled care, which is used when there's an expectation of the patient getting better. Mm-hmm. Long-term care is utilized when the person is not going to get better, when they're in a state that's chronic, and really the insurance helps people remain comfortable as much as possible in the venue they're choosing.
So it's more oriented to the venue rather than the service?
Well, the service, the insurance will provide a stream of income to pay for care in the venue of the client's choosing. The venue most commonly associated with this is the nursing home. And in fact, that is in many ways the last stop in the continuum of care, housing, and services that people may need. But, you know, the four main venues are assisted living, adult daycare, and care in the home. And we find that, you know, most people want to stay in the venue that they have created. And so that allows them to get care in their home.
And then, so this kind of helps pay for that as your, I guess, your health diminishes over time.
It does. It would really, in many cases, pick up where health insurance has left off and would provide a stream of income to pay for care in the venue the client's choosing.
And then, when is the right time to get this?
Well, one of the things that is important to consider, Lee, is the client's health. And, you know, on the open market, we have to reveal everything about the 10-year medical history, the 10-year surgical history, and what medication someone is taking. If the client has no health history, then they'll likely have a lot of options on the open market. If they do have health history, it almost sort of begets a second strategy to help them. You know, we start educating people right around the age of 40 because they have to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, they have parents in their 60s that perhaps might have an interest in learning more about this as well.
Now, is this is insurance, right?
It is.
Now, is it a type of insurance where you see a lot of younger people don't want to deal with health insurance, so they kind of maybe go without if they can for as long as possible until they see like, hey, I should probably do this. Is the same thing happen with older people in this regard where they're like, I'm going to go without until it becomes something I got to start paying attention to?
Well, one of the things that's misunderstood is that the clients have to be healthy to get the insurance. Mm-hmm. Because on the open market, on the individual side of things, we have to reveal everything, as we said earlier, about right. the 10-year history. Many people don't understand the issue until it's too late, until it's already happened to them. And then, you know, their options are sort of more limited. So this is an issue that needs to be considered. And, you know, your health is a pretty big playing card. And if you have interest, you need to play it and you know, put your interests out there on the open market and see what is the best option for you.
So now, this isn't something I can wait till I'm 80 to deal with. Like, it'll become unaffordable. I won't be able to afford it if I'm 80, if I was trying to get the same thing if I was 50.
So it's an age-based instrument. And most carriers will write people between the ages of 19 and 80, but there can be, depending upon the product that's chosen, a 3-4% premium difference between each year and age. And so an 80-year-old is going to pay, you know, 30% more than a 70-year-old. So, you know, price is certainly an important consideration because it is an age-based instrument. An 80-year-old, you know, if they're healthy, they can probably get, they may have some options if they can.
Right. You know, but the younger you are, the healthier are, the more options you have.
Yes.
And so then that's why it's better to have these conversations sooner than later.
Well, it's better to have to at least begin the education. Mm-hmm. And many don't understand that money pays for it, but health buys it.
So the healthier you are, the more options you have, no
yes.
matter what age you are, really.
Yes.
So now, how'd you get into this? Were you always in insurance?
No. You know, so what we found out in our family is if you don't have a plan, your family's your plan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when my parents considered this in the early 80s, my dad was a very successful businessman in a small town. And, you know, like a lot of men, dismissed the idea and didn't do anything. Well, unfortunately, the next year, you know, thereabouts, my mom was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And, you know, if you're not healthy, you don't get this insurance. That's another sort of, you know, issue that we had to face. And so, you know, for many years, my father was my mom's caregiver. And, you know, when you have to participate in those activities of daily living, it can change the dignity of your relationship. And in 1998, he sold his business and retired. And then for the next 8 years, did all the things that he threatened to do while he was working and putting three kids through school, hunting, fishing, and all those things. And then in November of 06, he called me at the office and he says, I have some news. And he says, I have stage 4 esophageal cancer. And my dad died on Father's Day of 07. And so, you know, we've been actively involved in helping both mom and dad. And they live in Minnesota. And, you know, I live here. My brother and sister live in Atlanta. So it's a, you know, it's many families don't understand this until it's already happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other part of this is, you know, privately, I didn't expect that my mom would outlive my dad. And
right.
She did. And so, you know, there's certainly a lot of learnings in there. And you know, if you have to coordinate care in the same city, it can be challenging. If all the siblings are in the same city, but in our case, it was complicated because we weren't in the same city, and it was further complicated because of my mom's health.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had to be heavily involved in both of their care for that period of time. And so I realized that, you know, we have to get out ahead of that and educate people and at least put them in position to understand what it is and perhaps more importantly, what it is not.
And is that the biggest disconnect that people aren't aware of it or they're not educated about this as an option? Do they think someone else is going to, or the government or something else is going to take care of them?
There can be a disconnect. What most, if somebody's been through it, if they have this experience, they already know a lot of the things that you and I perhaps have talked about. If they have not had the experience, it can be more difficult to grasp and it can be sort of, you know, a gray area thing and maybe, you know, sort of couched in, well, you know, no, it hasn't touched me yet, so maybe it won't happen to me. Kind
right.
of thing.
Do people in their head think I'm not going to live like they, or they don't want to think about? I mean, because intellectually you go, well, people are living longer. You know, I'm 54 right now. Hopefully I'll make it to 100 and I'm not thinking about the ramifications. Well, what if I do make it to 100? Like, what's that going to look like?
I think a lot of folks just don't know. And, you know, or if it hasn't touched them, it's hard to grasp all of the things that we've spoken about. People that have done financial planning, you know, this is maybe a logical consideration at some point. And, you know, you at least need to understand what it is so you can make an informed decision one way or the other.
Now, what percentage of people do financial planning? Is it like if you're of a certain wealth strata, then most of them do? Is that how it typically works?
Well, most of them, you know, most of the people that, you know, that have wealth have done some planning. You know, we only help people with long-term care. We don't manage money or anything mm-hmm. like that. But, you know, they understand how to leverage pennies to protect dollars. And they understand that the role that insurance can play in, you know, protecting, you know, what they've built up. So, you know, people that have done any sort of financial planning, you know, we look for logic patterns and people that have done planning, they should at least be aware of this and have an open conversation about, you know, what it is and more importantly, what it isn't. And of course, what it could mean for them if they take the action and what it could mean if they do not.
Now, you mentioned that you focus only on long-term care planning. And do financial advisors, is this kind of lumped in sometimes with what they do? They may not be a specialist in it, but they might offer a variety of services, and this might be one of them?
Sure, it can be. Many, you know, will manage money. They'll do the planning. They'll help folks with life insurance and disability. And this is sometimes lumped in with the rest of that.
So what's kind of the negative of working with somebody who is kind of a jack of all trades and not a specialist in this?
Well, you know, they're one of the things to be cognizant of, if you will, is, you know, somebody that dabbles, just dabbles. Somebody that is getting, you know, that is working with it every day and understands all the carriers and has a lot of experience. Perhaps that could be, you know, perhaps that could be an advantage for someone. It's more of an issue if somebody has health issues, because, you know, every carrier seems to be a little bit different about what they'll accept medically. It's less of an issue if somebody does not have any health history.
Now, if you're a financial planner, you might be tied to certain kind of products, right? Where you're kind of agnostic so that you can just look for the best fit.
Sure. What we do is we work with all the major players out there. We're not tied to anyone. Mm-hmm. We don't need a conversation to go a certain way. You know, what we do many times is dictated by how the client's health is because of the carrier's experience with certain matters. It could also be dictated by how the client wants to fund. If they want to write one check, you know, that creates a certain amount of alternatives. If they want to pay for 10 to 20 years, again, that creates a certain amount of alternatives. But ultimately, after education, there's an underwriting component and then also a funding component, because, you know, we endeavor to put something together that's meaningful, but also, you know, within the parameters of the client's, you know, financial planning and funding.
So what are the choices from a funding standpoint? Like you mentioned, I can write one check and be done with this?
Yeah, there's the main options really are, there's a single pay option where a client can write one check. There's a 10 pay option where they pay for 10 years and then they're done. There's, you know, options to pay between 10 and 20 years, 11, 12, 13. And then there's what we call the life pay alternative, which, hey, we pay the premiums and, you know, until we pass on or until we need the services. So, you know, the funding strategy can be really important because, you know, somebody that is 50 that, you know, is in their high earning years may want to pay for a defined period of time. And, you know, when they at some point go on a fixed income, this is something that they've funded and taken care of.
Mm-hmm. So what are we talking about money-wise? Is it something that's tens of thousands of dollars a year? Or is it?
If it's really based on the individual. Okay, so, you know, the younger somebody is, we mentioned, I think, at the outset of the show that there can be a 3 to 4% premium difference between each year and age, depending upon the product. So that's a factor. You know, the underwriting class that someone comes in at can be a factor. Most carriers that accept people will accept, you know, people at the standard rate. If people are very, very healthy, perhaps they could realize a preferred discount, which can be 10 to 15%. Another thing that determines the pricing is the marital status or the relationship status of somebody, which can result in additional discounts, usually 10 to 15%. Mm-hmm. So there are many things that affect the price. And ultimately, the client, if they successfully navigate underwriting, can determine their premium. They might say, well, Lee, here's my budget for this. And, you know, as the advisor, we would say, well, okay, here's kind of what the options are.
Mm-hmm. And then if you pay one lump sum, how does that pay out when it's time to pay out? Is it something that I could, if I don't live to that age, then I lose that?
Well, it depends on there's two really different camps and solutions. There's what we call the traditional long-term care players where, you know, the client would pay in a certain amount for a certain period of time. And if they needed the services, the carrier would pay out according to how their plan was designed. But if they died healthy, the money is gone. There's another camp of alternatives called asset-based alternatives, which, you know, usually have a life and long-term care component where they put the money into these instruments. And if they die and they never need services, it will pay out something to the beneficiary. But mm-hmm. if they need long-term care, it would pay out for those services. And so the money is not technically lost if you take the asset-based alternative.
So, and you work with both, or you have a recommendation for one over the other?
Yeah, we work with all of them. I mean, what we do is once we understand the client and help them understand this and help them get to wherever it is they got to get to on this, we would have a full understanding of their medical history and then shop it. And, you know, let the care, you know, have an open conversation on their behalf with the carriers. We don't reveal who the clients are, but we would like to get a dialogue with the carriers to understand, you know, who are the takers. Sometimes they have additional questions. Then we talk to the client about what their options are carrier-wise. And they have to see an apples-to-apples comparison with certain plan designs or certain premium budgets. So they understand, you know, how far their money is going with each carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Because each carrier is a little bit different about how they price certain issues or how they price men and women.
And for you as an organization, do you focus more on men than women, women than men? Is there, like, what's the profile of your perfect client?
Well, we try to help. We want to help people understand it. Okay. And so our history has been, you know, helping C-suite individuals, companies, and families understand long-term care. The first part of any, advice is just helping getting people's questions answered, helping them understand what it is. And like we said earlier, more importantly, what it is not.
Mm-hmm. So now sometimes companies bring you in to talk to their employees and just kind of educate them about the offering.
Sure. This is yes, that does happen. Many times the employer will put this in as a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Many times they will use this as an executive benefit. There is a way to tier the offering on the basis of title, income, and tenure. Or, we see a lot of companies that their employees are relying more and more on their employers for financial planning related measures. And it can be set up as a completely voluntary benefit, which simply means that if an employee wants to participate, it's at their cost.
Mm-hmm.
And the employer provides the venue and they, help us educate them with the various issues.
So you work with companies in that manner or individuals? You don't. It doesn't
Both.
Matter, right?
Both. Our expertise is just in long-term care. You know, we work with companies. There's a variety of ways for companies to offer this and consider it. And, everything, again, is founded on, the basis of our company, which is, helping people understand it.
Mm-hmm. And when you started your career, did you always have your own practice or was this something that happened over time?
No, it happened over time. When I got started, when I graduated from the University of Iowa in 1987, I actually got some experience making windows at Pella, Iowa. And it was a great, great experience, a great product. In between getting an MBA, I had another manufacturing job, and then I had a couple of pharmaceutical selling jobs, legal ones, with a couple of companies in the early 90s. And then at the end of the 90s, I helped dentists with dental implants. And then at the turn of the century, began a financial planning career and realized that this long-term care thing, I didn't like how it was being sold. I didn't like how it was being positioned and really began to study, what the government was doing, what they weren't doing, and really figured out how to go into companies and bring this to more than just one or two people.
Right. Because as you mentioned, this was kind of personal.
Yeah, very personal and really... our story is, we use that to help educate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, part of the education is understanding what inaction can look like what we did, and, what action can look like what many of the people that we've helped to have done.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to understand the good, bad, and the indifferent about this.
So now, what's the most rewarding part of this for you?
I think, just helping people understand it and, really creating. Really creating an air of consultative engagement and creating the space where people can just ask questions freely. Many people say, well, should I do this? When should I do it? What's the timing? And they have to get their questions answered. They have to understand what this is. And so what's rewarding? Helping people. We seem to have developed a sub niche with people that have a lot of health issues and finding them coverage. That's gratifying as well, because many times folks have been told, well, hey, you can't get it. And, turns out that, perhaps there could be some options for them, even if they've already been turned down.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine, they're almost at a point of desperation and then you're kind of giving them a lifeline, but there's hope.
Well, we have to, we're transparent and we've got a detailed process where we take people through and, we'll help people. We use the detailed algorithm that we built to set expectations, to have open conversations with carers and find out if there are any takers out there. And so it's a lot more work, but it's probably one of the most gratifying things that we do.
Now, can you walk us through what that initial conversation because some people are going to have, like you mentioned, this maybe dissonance where they don't want to think about it and they don't want to deal with this. What does that first conversation when you are educating them look like?
I think part of the you know, I think it's incumbent on whoever is helping someone to create a space where people can ask questions freely. Because sometimes people will be concerned to talk about their medical history. Sometimes people will not really want to talk about, you know, their prior experience or you know, their money or their assets. And so all of those things are important in figuring out if somebody should pursue this. But, you know, we start off question, you know, we would want to make sure that, you know, we would say to some, we say to many clients, how can I help you today? What are your questions? You know, why is this important to you? What's important to you? And, you know, when people start talking about their family, and they start talking about, you know, the kind of legacy that they're building, this is certainly something that they need to consider.
Because they don't want to be a burden on their children or the family, right?
I think that I don't think, I think anybody doesn't want to be a burden. But I think, you know, understanding where this might fit in and understanding that, hey, nothing pays for this. You know, you're the one that's paying for this. And many just don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. So when you say they don't understand that, they must, or they don't want to think about it, that somebody has to pay for it.
I think a lot of people, if they haven't had an experience with long-term care, I think it just may not be on the radar. And, you know, people are busy, they're working, they're out there working hard, providing for their families. And if it hasn't touched them, it's hard sometimes to grasp. Now, if somebody has a prior logic pattern of doing financial planning, then at some point, you know, their advisor is probably telling them, hey, this is something that we should talk about and consider.
Right.
But people that have had the prior experience, that have helped parents, that have helped in-laws, that it's one of the most powerful predictors if, you know, people do anything about this is if they've been through it.
But now, aren't you finding that more and more people have been touched by this in some manner?
Yes. Yeah, we certainly find that. And, you know, a lot of the things that we've spoken about, those folks already know. And so on some level, you know, the education is more, a little more straightforward with somebody mm-hmm. that has had the experience.
And when they've had the experience and they've seen that no one is going to write that check except for your family or you personally, it's nice to have some insurance that's going to help you with this.
Well, there's two strategies. I mean, there's, you know, whatever the daily cost is, and it could be $250 to $300 a day. If I'm in a private room in a nursing home in the Atlanta area, maybe it's more, but that's the retail cost. Okay. So if it's $250 a day, that's $7,500 a month. That's $90,000 a year, potentially, sometimes more, sometimes less. And if you buy the insurance, that's a wholesale perspective. You know, you're taking a lot of risk off the table for a fraction of the retail cost.
Mm-hmm. And that's the math that most people aren't doing.
Well, they, again, I think in their defense, they just may not be aware of it. It hasn't touched them. What we try to do is when we start talking to people, we start off our meeting by saying, how can we help you today? What are your questions? You know, and many people already have a list of questions written out.
So what are some of the questions that they typically ask you?
Well, how is this different than health insurance?
Okay, so that at that level, they don't understand that long-term care is more about the space than it is the doctor, you know, giving you a shot.
Well, health insurance helps you get better.
Right.
And it's delivered by somebody with a lot of training and right. There's skilled care and there's an expectation of recovery, whereas long-term care is really, you know, it's meant to make a client more comfortable, and you know, they're in a more of a chronic situation. So it may be part of the discussion is devoted to understanding the differences between
those two.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're probably thinking, well, I got health insurance, so that probably covers this too.
Yes.
And that's not accurate.
Yeah. We always make it a point to make sure that people understand the difference between their private health care, private health insurance and Medicare, because they do essentially the same thing. They help people get better.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the questions. What are some of the other questions?
Another question is, you know, well, what are my chances of this happening to me? And, you know, we don't get into statistics just because it can create, you know, sort of an argumentative atmosphere. I mean, you know, people may think the worst thing could happen to someone else, but what we do try to get them to understand is that, you know, basically, you know, three agreements. One is, you know, is it your expectation that you'll live a long life? Well, you know, 35, 40 years ago, if someone had a heart attack or a stroke, they died a lot of times.
Right.
And now it's not necessarily the case because of how medicine has progressed. And you look at the information that's out there, hydration, nutrition, eat this, not that. And so I think you know, we ask people, is it your expectation that you live a long time? Well, a lot of people are working hard. They're, you know, they're going to their doctor. They're getting, they're working out with a trainer. So step one is almost an afterthought. And it's probably in most cases, yes. Agreement two is, well, okay, so if you live long enough, is it reasonable to say that you may need some assistance? You could require some assistance at some point. Think about the progression of medicine. Think about people trying to live a long time. Two is really, you know, maybe straightforward as well. So if the answer to that is yes, then what we try to get them to understand with our experience is, okay, well, so if the long-term care issue and this associated challenge has presented itself to you, do you realize it's not about you? Because your life doesn't end, someone else's does.
Right.
And we talk about the emotional and physical consequences that sometimes present themselves for the people that have to help out. And there's a secondary set of consequences, Lee, and that is somebody's got to pay for it.
Right.
So there's a financial set of consequences.
And also, how is it impacting your family? Because your family at some point is going to have to deal with it one way or another.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what we found out, you know, in our family so far, the opportunity for long-term care has been 0 or 100%. You know, and we found out, you know, that we're the plan.
Right.
If, you know, if we haven't taken the time to do the
right.
plan.
Right. So if you don't have a plan, you're the plan.
And that's what we found out. Yes.
So now, for people who want to learn more, how do they go to your website? How do they learn more?
Yes. So, my, website is www.thelongtermcareplanninggroup.com, or they could email me at Corey@thelongtermcareplanninggroup.com.
And on the website, you answer a lot of these questions and it has a lot of information about this. You're available, I would imagine, to have conversations, but you're also available for organizations that want you to come in and talk to the executive team or their employees about this.
Absolutely.
As an option, right?
Yes.
All right. I've been very patient. I'm sitting over here about to bust. Can we tell them now? Can we let our listeners know? Corey, you're launching a new series within High Velocity Radio Show, published on the Business Radio X network. Tell us what you got in mind. Who are you going to talk to? What you're going to be talking about? That kind of stuff.
Well, I really like, I want to have a format of a show that gives business owners a platform to tell their stories. I think a lot of times we don't hear the positive things that the business owners and executives are doing in the community, and we want to provide a platform that demonstrates all the good work they're doing. So that's one of the goals of the show.
Because you work with a lot of business owners, and they're helping you, so you want to help them kind of get the word out about the stuff that they got going on.
Yeah, and I enjoy hearing personally about people's successes. I think it's a little bit counter to sometimes what we hear in the media with some of the negative things going on. And as we said earlier, I just really want to provide a platform to talk about the good things that the folks in the community and the business owners are doing.
Now, do you have a client now that's a business owner? You can share a story that they're doing good work? Anything surprising or interesting that comes to mind? Any of your clients or people you know?
There's so many. Mm-hmm. I don't know where to begin, but one that comes to mind is a really good client of mine. He actually is in the piano business. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. We were raising money for veterans that come back with PTSD, and he donated a piano. So I thought that was incredible that he was willing to do that. And, you know, it turns out he had a veteran that worked on a staff that he felt very, very strongly about it. And that was a way that he contributed and made our event last September a success.
And that it's interesting you bring that up, because that is the stuff that typically goes under the radar of traditional media. When every day that person's out there battling, trying to do the best they can to serve their family, themselves, and their community. And they do some good work like that, and that those stories aren't told. So I'm excited to be able to help you tell some of those stories, because it's important.
Yeah, there's a lot more stories where that came from.
Absolutely.
No, I'm fired up about this series. I cannot wait. It's going to be so much fun. It's Tuesdays with Corey, right? That's our moniker?
It is,
yeah?
Yes.
How cool is that? We're going to be interviewing some of the best and brightest and sharing those stories. It's going to be a great deal of fun. And Lee, you and I are going to get an opportunity to participate in that as we go along. So I was polite for the serious part of the conversation today, but I wanted to make sure that we told our listeners about that. Before we wrap, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you if they'd like to have a conversation with you or someone on your team about long-term planning. care planning. And then also, though, if they may be interested or may know someone who we should consider having on the show at Tuesdays with Corey, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is my email address, which is Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at, and then all one word, thelongtermcareplanninggroup.com.
All right. Well, it's been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon. Looking so forward to working with you in the coming weeks and months. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest today, Corey Rick, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.